Hey there, Music Podcast for Kids listeners. We are excited to have this bonus episode with the fabulous film score composer, Harry Gregson-Williams. Our interview will accompany a show released in October, all about mood music, but we really wanted to have you take a listen to the journey of one of the most sought-after and prolific composers of today. Make sure to subscribe to Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast so you know when the next show is released. We hope you enjoy.
Mr. Henry, Mr. Fife, love hanging out with you. The Music Podcast for Kids.
Harry Gregson-Williams is one of the most distinguished composers, orchestrators, and music producers in film today. Mr. Gregson-Williams has received many awards for his music, including a Grammy and Golden Globe. His brilliant music is found in hit movies like The Martian, Chronicles of Narnia, X-Men Wolverine, and all four Shrek movies, just to name a few. Recently, his music is found in the documentary from Disney Nature called Penguins. And released on September 4th of 2020, his music accompanies the Disney movie Mulan, which can be seen on Disney Plus as a premiere video on demand release. It is with great excitement to introduce Harry Gregson-Williams. Hello, Harry, and welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we really appreciate you doing this with us. And the one thing we like to start out with is we like to talk about the background of music education that you had as a child. So you grew up in the United Kingdom.
I did.
And curious as to what experiences you had in the school setting in the UK.
Well, I was very lucky to be sent to a very musical school. In fact, it was specifically on a music scholarship that I went to this school. So I got a really good grounding in music. You know, I think thinking back is quite a long time ago. Before I was able to have breakfast, I had to practice my instruments. Once I'd done that, I could have breakfast and then get on with the day. And then there was an awful lot of, practicing my instruments. But music was made really fun for me. It was a high standard was asked of me. When you try and hit high standards, sometimes you come in a little bit below. But that was all part of, well, one does. And, sometimes you hit the mark. And that was all part of that experience, which I think put me in a good place for the job that I do now, which is, as you know, as a film composer.
Yeah,
sure. And so you took private lessons at the school there. So what was your primary instrument as a child starting out?
Well, it was my voice. So that's easy to carry around. Never forget it. Yeah, didn't show up to a violin lesson without a violin. It was as a boy chorister, before my voice changed. It was pretty intensive. But I also took piano lessons and violin lessons, which again, the violin came in very useful. I mean, I actually gave the violin up once I got to a certain standard, but it came in very useful later on in my life now when I'm, when I'm using the orchestra and I'm thinking about orchestration and I have some knowledge of a bowed instrument, whether it's violin, viola, cello. I know the mechanics of that. I'm not a fine player by any means. You know, to be a film composer, that's not what the qualification is.
So, So when you, as you're going through your schooling, when did you become interested in the idea of composing music for movies or, other type of media? Like, when did that become something you were like, that's what I want to do?
I think it came to me quite a lot later. I went through regular school, came out the other end and went to music college in London, in England. Mm-hmm. And I studied singing and piano and the other things there. I studied music. But when I left there, no one had put that idea in my head that this was a possibility. Yeah. And I decided I wanted to teach music because I'd had such a good time myself as a pupil as a young man, I didn't feel like I'd forgotten what it would be like to be taught by someone who inspired me you know, who really got me going on music. So I went into teaching for quite a while, which I loved and adored and still do. It was, I think, probably seeing a movie or hearing about a movie score pricked my imagination. And I can tell you that literally the moment that I thought, okay, I think I better try this, is when I met the very well-known film composer, Hans Zimmer. And it was pretty much a chance meeting in London. We got on like a house on fire, and he showed me what he was doing, and I couldn't believe what fun he was having, actually, and what creative freedom he had. You know, he's playing with all these toys. Now, it was just when I met him, it was about 1994, 1995, so quite a long time ago, 25 years ago, something like that. And just at that time, technology was coming up in a way that if you wanted to try and compose, now let's be clear. Composing is quite a grand name. I think I make music up, you know? It'd be rather like making stories up. I mean, we do as composers, we make stories through music. Now, I couldn't believe the sounds that he was able to make himself. He wasn't standing in front of an orchestra. Mm-hmm. He didn't have, a string quartet sitting there. He wasn't doing that. What he had was a bunch of samplers and electronics that were making you feel like he actually did have an orchestra there. And it was just just when technology was allowing a composer like himself to be able to have what we call samples. Now, some people, we use that word sample quite a lot. You've probably heard it a lot when someone says, oh, someone sampled a song and they put it in another song. Well, that surely can happen. And that literally means taking a little extract from someone's composition and using it in a different way. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is actually recording individual instruments playing at individual dynamics. So take the violin, for instance, playing the lowest note on the violin loudly and fairly loudly and quietly. And those three recordings being put underneath the key, the corresponding key on a keyboard, so that if I play it hard, I'm going to hear that note play like this.
Right.
And he had sampled the whole orchestra. More than that, he sampled drummers and guitars and vocalists. And so he had on his template, as we call it, his little computer, he could say, ooh, I fancy a French horn sound. And he'd go down to a track that says French horn and and there he was.
Yeah.
And I just thought, this is incredible world that was open to me. And he did. We got on really well. And he was in London when I met him. That's where I lived. And I'd never been to America. And I came back with him when he returned to Los Angeles. I came to work for him. So
cool.
Wow, that's great.
And I was bitten by the bug.
So as musicians, we always have, you know, inspirations, people we look up to musically. I know for myself, Stevie Ray Vaughan, guitar, and Luciano Pavarotti for voice. Did you have, what were some of your inspirations? Who were some of your inspirations growing up musically?
Well, funny enough, my brothers and sisters and my parents played music, and I really grew up in a household where there was a lot of music going on. So yes, I grew up in, when David Bowie was making some amazing music. I grew up when the Beatles had already made a lot of music and were still making it. So there were those people to look to, but more than that, I think I really wanted to play with my dad and my brothers and sister, I did that almost every day when I wasn't at school, and I guess because if we'd have had iPads at that time, I probably wouldn't. Like, it'd be like, Dad, do you want to play Fortnite? Yeah. No. It was, actually, it wasn't really me asking. He'd say, Harry, come to the piano. You take this hand, you take that, and we'd play piano duets or whatever. And we'd crash through making horrible mistakes. But our one rule was we couldn't stop. We wouldn't stop. We'd just go through these things. Yeah. And a range of music. And I found that was really, really inspirational to me.
Yeah.
And I bet that made some special memories too. Probably have very fond.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah. So what age did you develop your first orchestral score to accompany a visual piece?
Okay. Well, that probably was just before I met Hans, and I was in about 1995 in London, and I had an opportunity to do a BBC, thriller, I think it was called Ghost Stories. And I thought, ooh, I can't remember how I managed to persuade the BBC to let me do. So the BBC in England is a British broadcasting company.
Right.
Just to explain, that would be, back in those days, we only had 3 or 4 channels on the TV. That's it. There were just 3 or 4. And the number one was BBC One. So to have to be able to do something that was going to get screened on BBC One, that was a big deal for me, very big deal.
Sure, yeah.
And it was probably quite forgettable what I did, but I managed to get through it somehow.
Yeah.
But in terms of a decent feature film, I think we're talking, what was the first big feature film? I did a little movie called The Borrowers. And I say a little movie, but a big feature film. It was a cinematic thing, very English. But I was already over here in Los Angeles learning my craft with Hans Zimmer. And I think it came through Hans, you know, that probably the director wanted the great Hans Zimmer to write the music for this thing. And he wasn't going to get him because he was busy doing something probably more interesting.
Yeah.
So he probably said, well, what about this chap, Harry? He's starting up.
Yeah, that's
so
cool.
I got a start, yeah.
Yeah, and, that's great.
What was lovely about that is that it was very English about the little people who live under the floorboards running around. I felt very at home doing that music because it was music for a family film. And I guess I'd spent years teaching music. So I felt like that probably would be a good area for me to try and compose for first, since I had spent a lot of time teaching and being around. Perhaps I'd know how to do this, but, it's kind of trial and error. Like anything in life, I think, you know, I wasn't successful straight away at all at this. What I did decide straight away was that I was going to work hard at it. And I was very fortunate to be working under a composer who was so well known and so prolific and so generous with his time. He showed me things, not necessarily how to compose, but how to get my ideas, my musical ideas out of my head.
Yeah.
You know, and as I said, at that time, 1995 or something, it was just on the cusp of this amazing technology allowing you to tap into any sound of any instrument just at your fingertips. And it was extraordinary.
Yeah, that's something. So one of this show that we're having is all about mood music. So that's like what we are talking about with this show before the interview. And so we're trying to discuss how, you know, music is the key to fully unlock the emotion in film, radio, or podcast.
Yep.
And in the documentary Penguins that you composed, it seemed to just have a huge part in telling the story. And could you give us an example of how your music in Penguins enhanced that story?
Okay, well, that's a great example. So I was asked to do this Disney nature film called Penguins. And lo and behold, they didn't really have any humans in it. Great. That means there's no talking. Because as a film composer, when you create the music track, obviously there are people talking on screen and the music can't be shutting that out. That's, you know, we've got to be complementing that and finding ways of ducking and diving around that. So in this movie, Penguins, there is a narrator, so one person is telling the story, but the music had to really, really complement that and do some heavy lifting in the story department. So, I mean, with this, for instance, the very beginning of this this film, we're introduced to a single penguin. I think they called him Steve, so that's him. And we follow that penguin through kind of his life cycle. He finds he's a naughty kid to begin with, and then he finds a mate, he has some chicks, and so on and so forth. But the very first sort of 5 minutes of this film, the narrator says, here we are, we're in Antarctica, those beautiful shots of mountainous ice, and then there are the penguins. And he says, well, meet Steve, and then big close-up of a penguin. and he's kind of waddling across the thing. And so the story starts to develop. Now, given the fact that penguins can't smile, they can't because they don't have the muscles here.
Right.
And given the fact that penguins are pretty much black and white and snow is white, if you're thinking of the big cinema screen, there's not that much color going on. So right. the music had to provide a lot of color. The first piece that I wrote for that movie, which plays under the first scene, is what I call the Penguin March. So it was very much any march. It's four beats in a bar. It's kind of at walking pace, a brisk walking pace, like a march should be. And you know, I went to my piano and worked out what I wanted to do with it. But having done that, I can then start finding the colors. So whereas on the piano, my left hand was going plum, 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 as it would in a march, I didn't have to have the piano playing that. So I had actually a saxophone quartet, and a double bass. So immediately there's a little color there, some string orchestra playing along, and then some muted trumpets, trumpets with mutes in them, playing the tune. And then actually I had hired a choir to sing some of the grander bits, but we had them play, we had them whistle. So instead of having the tune played on some violins or a piano, they were whistling the tune. So immediately some colors are added to this scene. And this way, within 5 minutes of this film, one starts to really feel the character of this penguin, Steve, because really all we're seeing is a penguin waddling around.
Right.
And the narrator is telling us, you know, he's a naughty little chap. He keeps getting separated from the rest of his team, and he's always late for everything. But the music really had to tell more of the story about him.
Absolutely.
And it was through the colors of the orchestration.
Yes.
So not keeping it sort of bland and not keeping it black and white at all, but trying to expand the palette out.
Yeah.
we were actually talking earlier, what did the choir think of that when you said, okay, you're going to whistle now?
Yes, quite. They didn't know that was coming because, they did actually, to be honest, we had to ask a couple of people to sit down because that was really bad. Okay. There were some other cues that they actually sang on. So that they were fine with it. They thought it was great fun. It's quite difficult to record whistling actually.
Yes.
There's a high frequencies and a lot of sibilance and noise going on.
Right.
That's great. So we're also always curious about how a composer starts the creation process for a particular theme. So once you have an idea, the script or a scene, do you sit down at the piano and start putting ideas together? Do you just get the staff paper out right away and start writing, or just noodling around, or go to your samples and all the different resources that you have? How does that process really start?
Okay, well, a bit of everything you've just said. I think if I could take an example, let's see, writing a theme for Shrek, for instance. Mm. So one's looking at Shrek. He's kind of chunky. He's kind of bad tempered. He's kind of green. He's kind of gross. He's kind of inappropriate. So his theme's not going to be
right.
So we're going to think of something a little lumpy, a little, but a theme that probably by the end of the movie, we're going to want to make it warm and heroic. And so the beginning of the process for me usually is sitting at the piano where I'm most comfortable. And at the piano, I'm not distracted by thinking, ooh, this could be French horn. This could be a bagpipe or whatever it is. Because that I can get distracted with that. So I'm really thinking about what I want to do with harmony and then melody. Mm-hmm. So once I've got Shrek's theme, say, what instrument would give me what I want from his character? And actually, in the first couple of times we meet Shrek in the first movie, we ended up by having his melody played by a cellist, but not on his cello. We hired a double bass, which is similar, but it's not the same. And asked him to play it. He said, but I can't, I never played it. Just play it. So there was something lumpy and not quite right about it. The beginning of the process is always a little bit nervy, to be honest, because we're not flying solo here. You know, I have to share everything. It's a collaborative thing.
Yeah.
It's a teamwork thing, making a film. So once I've got an idea, maybe I'll get someone in to come and play something to zing up my demo a bit. But at some stage, I've got to bring in the director, maybe the producers, have them sit down in my studio and press play and then read the room, you know, see if they recoil.
Right.
See if they jump up and down. Yes. And then react accordingly, because You know, being a film composer, you do get pushed back quite a lot because everybody's got an opinion about music. And as I said, you earlier, you know, one's not right every time and one's not necessarily nailing it every time. So that's the hope and that's what we aim for. But quite often, you know, a director might say, I like that, Harry. I like it. I wish it was a little sweeter, or I wish it was a little sourer. I wish it was a little faster, a little redder, a little bluer, a little this, a little that. Right. Yeah. And then one's got to take that on board and not take offense, not get all, well, I think it's fine as it is. That's not really going to get us anywhere. So it's really, really, it's really being a part of a team and realizing that. And then once one's got to that stage and the director, the producer, and they're liking what you're doing, then you can, then, you know, one can get into the studio and start scoring individual moments of the film.
Okay.
And really get underway.
Yeah.
And how was that in the beginning when they didn't quite like what the sound was or they wanted it changed? Was that hard to hear that early on? Or?
Yeah, it's always, it is to this day. I've done over 100 scores and I don't like to hear that. But you know, it must be the same for anybody who's in a team, whether you're in a soccer team or whatever team you're in. You know, you because we're not always doing the right things. But as I say, in my job, particularly in my job, it's really necessary to have, not to have thick skin, or it's not, I don't have to be blown over. I can fight back a bit and give my opinion. But really, we're all aiming for the same thing. And quite often, it is the director's vision of the film that I'm trying to fulfill. So if he's not liking it, it's no good that I like it.
Right.
That doesn't work. Well, my mum likes it. What?
She has to. She's
your mum. Yeah, that's right. Well, he didn't like it. So frankly, it's a collaborative thing. And, you know, one of the qualities, and this is something that Hans Zimmer taught me when I started apprenticing with him, you know, it's really necessary to keep an open mind and understand that, you know, we're all aiming for the best thing, which is the best experience, the best way of telling a story. And music is just a part of that, you know. There are other people working on the costume design or the hair design or the makeup, the editing of the film, the visual effects. And in the case of, say, a movie like Shrek, you know, the lighting, the colors, all the things that go into making an animation. And so music is part of that. And so if you fancy being a music creator who just gets to do what you think is right, well, then you're probably a little Mozart and you might have to live a life that's outside of the film industry.
Because we
write music to order. Can I have something by next Wednesday, for instance? And we're part of a team.
Yeah,
that's what I like about it, actually. I mean, if I were a sportsman, I don't think I'd be a golf player. I wouldn't. I like being a team.
In a team. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. So I've seen that a lot of the film score writers they don't conduct their own music during the recording sessions. Is that something that you typically do, or?
Yeah, I always do. I have done since the beginning. And I'll tell you, there may be a few other reasons that I don't know for you know, whether Danny Elfman does or Thomas Newman or Hans Zimmer or whoever they are. I know Hans doesn't because I know him very well. Mm-hmm. And actually that's where I started conducting his scores.
Okay.
That's where I got my first experience of that. And when I started to do my own scores, I wanted to continue that. You know, one of the reasons that Hans doesn't, I mean, you'd have to ask him to be absolutely accurate, is that he prefers to think that he can get what he wants by being in the control room, not being in the room with the orchestra. Mm-hmm. And conducting is one thing, but what's actually being recorded and the way that the players are playing it. So, for instance, if Hans, way back on a movie called Muppet Treasure Island, actually, which was the first movie I did with Hans.
Wow.
You know, I conducted that score, but he wrote the score. Mm-hmm. Now, I was in with the orchestra conducting, had headphones on, and he might buzz through from the control room and say, Harry, stop. No, there's something, I don't like the way the violins are playing it. Why? It sounds so weak. What's going on? I would then interpret that. Okay, violins, listen, it says mezzo forte in your score. Let's play a bit more. Let's give it some more of that, whatever. So he prefers, and many composers do that, to feel that they're getting to where they need to get to, which is to make the best score they can.
Right.
By being in the control room and not being in amongst the action. Gotcha. Yeah. But for my own part, the thrill of conducting was just too too much. And I love to do that. I always have my most trusted assistant or right-hand man girl in the control room doing what I've just described Hans was doing. So she or he would stop me and say, look, I don't think this is what you mean here. It's not coming across like that. You know, the trumpets are too loud or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I also can hear what's going on. So I prefer to have the eye contact with the players and try and get the performance out of them. Sure. And it's less about studio conducting. It's less about beating time. Because if it was, I wouldn't be very good at it because I never said conduct. Actually, in our earphones, we almost always have where we have some of the backing track, we have a click track.
Right,
and
okay.
That's been laid down previously. So the players actually know the tempo. They're hearing it. So they don't actually need to be doing that. That would be very uncomfortable. Wow. What I try and make myself busy with is knowing the music and knowing what emotion I'm trying to get from it. Is forgetting so much of the rigid beating is I know the trumpets are going to come in a minute and I know they're loud to be a little bit too loud. So I'm looking at the trumpets. I've got eye contact with 3, 4. So I'm going to bring them in and somehow coach them live, as it were, to give me what I need.
Yeah.
So I think that people do both ways perfectly successfully.
Yep.
Cool. Wow. So many of our listeners are kids, hence the name of our podcast, the music podcast for kids. And some might even dream of being like you and dream of writing film scores. So I heard you say once that the it would be great for up and coming composers to, I think you said, formulate a unique individual path that suits them as a composer when starting out. So not just go along to get along, but to really really be pioneers and trailblazers. So what advice,
isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Don't be average, be a trailblazer.
That's right. We're curious, what advice or a bit of wisdom would you have maybe for our listeners that if they want to explore the world of music around them and possibly look to doing what you do or something similar, what advice might you pass on?
Well, I'd say, first of all, you know, to be a film composer who's asked to do films, you don't necessarily have to have a thorough musical education. Using my old friend Hans Zimmer as an example, I think he managed to get through one piano lesson in his life. So he's not an instrumentalist. He can play guitar, he can play a bit of piano, but his genius is what's going on here. And he's found a way to get that out of him through these flashing lights and buzzing machines onto the screen. So I'm coming at it slightly differently than Hans, because I spent, you know, since I was 6 until I was 18, you know, music schools studying music and harmony. So I'm coming at it that way. But one is not necessarily exclusive of the other. I'm sure there are some clever bunnies out there who have got both things going on. But Hans used to tease me that I didn't, you know, I hadn't lived because I wasn't part of a rock band as a teenager. And of course he was. But you can't have everything. I was a music college studying away. So in answer to your question, I'd say, you know, what I was going to say originally was get a really solid musical education. I mean, that can't help hurt, can it? I mean, it can't hurt at all. But failing that, that's not necessarily, you know, there are examples of real brilliant genius film composers working who are very musical people. I mean, Hans is extremely musical, but he hadn't had that part of the education. He's educated himself and his way of doing it.
Yeah.
I think the most preferred way would be to have some sort of foundation in music, harmony, music playing, and then have a lot of passion for it. And then perhaps most importantly, I was very fortunate that happened to me, is to find a really fun, crazy, mad, hardworking, brilliant, genius composer to assist and become his assistant. And, you know, then you're not the fall guy. Then you're not getting fired off a film because you missed where you were supposed to be. No, he's in the hot seat. And hopefully your time will come, you know. And actually in this business, very much it does what goes around does come around. You know, it's very typical for, I was with Hans 5 or 6 years, I just had a really brilliant assistant leave me and spread her wings, which was very sad for me, because mm-hmm. I would have liked to have put a ball and chain on her foot and kept her. She's a bloody brilliant, absolutely brilliant assistant. However, you know, there comes a time when she's got to fly the nest.
Yeah.
She can be the composer she wants to be, but it's a great grounding to have a few years, certainly as an assistant. And yeah, you don't want to assist a boring, grumpy guy, do you? Who does one film every 5 years. No, you want to find someone who's really cool and fun, who's really busy. The busier right. the better. Why?
Right.
Because he's going to need for you to fill in some blanks there.
Sure.
Yeah? Right.
I mean, if the guy's sitting on his hands, he's got nothing to do, what are you going to do?
Yeah, right.
So I would say, you know, I would say if you arrive at that stage with a foundation of and some knowledge, and these days, unlike when I shot up with Hans, because I'd never owned a computer, let alone used computers in music. And that's what he was doing. Mm-hmm. But he didn't discount me. He didn't say, well, you can't come and work for me. He just said, you've got to get in a room and learn how to do this. Don't come out until you do. So, you know, obviously, whichever path anybody might want to take, probably these days, they'd have to get familiar with programming.
With the technology.
And sequencing right? music.
Sure, because yeah.
Really, I think there's probably only two or three working composers who probably don't get involved in that kind of things, and one of them is probably John Williams.
I was just going to say the other Williams.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
yeah.
And he deserves whatever he can get.
Very true. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Harry, for being with us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
One of your film scores is coming out here soon with the movie Mulan.
Oh, sure.
So looking...
It's a long time on that movie, and it was thrown about here and there and here and there, and now it's coming soon.
Yeah, yeah. So we're really excited for that.
Excellent.
And we just wanted to thank you again. It has just been really intriguing to talk to you, and just cannot thank you enough. And
okay, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Great.
Really appreciate it. Thanks, Harry.